Welcome to this week's episode of Off the Assembly Line. I'm your host, Rebecca Reed, and every week I sit down for possibility-sparking conversation with innovative educators and entrepreneurs who are bringing the future to education, one beautiful disruption at a time. Hey guys, thanks for joining me for the first episode of the decade. My name is Rebecca Reed, and if this is your first time listening, you're in for a good one. I can't think of a better way to start the new year than with mindfulness, and over the next two episodes, we're going to hear from some mindfulness experts doing incredible work in education. This week, I'm talking with Lou Redmond, founder of One Mindful Education, which bridges the gap between mindfulness and social-emotional learning. Lou brings mindfulness and self-care into schools through student programs, assemblies, and dynamic teacher trainings. On today's episode, Lou shares a powerful approach to mindfulness that is relational, holistic, and uniquely human, but he doesn't just tell us about it. Later in the episode, Lou actually walks us through a few simple exercises to get us started. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I'm so excited to share it with you. Here we go. So I'm here with Lou Redmond, founder of One Mindful Education. And Lou, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rebecca.
Yeah, so you never thought you'd be in schools, is that right?
For the most part, yeah, I would say that is correct, especially if we're going back to college and that sort of education, then definitely.
So if we're taking it back, yeah, this is a path that you didn't expect. So how did you wind up working in schools, working with students, working with teachers?
Well, I had gotten into the health and wellness space around, I would say, 5 years ago. So 2015, after leaving a corporate job and pursuing something that was a bit more fulfilling to me. And I had been just really working with adults for a couple years. And how the schools came about was I had been reaching out to a few schools in the area just on a whim, really, just like to see if I could work with some kids. I'd had this idea to do an after-school workshop with some kids around some of the topics that I think would be important for them. And I had a school reach back out and ask me if I wanted to do something that helped train their teachers on how to bring mindfulness and yoga techniques into the classroom. And at the time, honestly, I didn't really have what they were asking for, but I was like, you know what? I think I can create something like this. And I did, and it went super well. And I've really been running with that ever since and really enjoying and just seeing how needed these topics are and these practices are in schools, that it's really been a joy to bring my expertise into this field, and also just a joy to actually work with kids as well. So I have two sides. I work directly with kids with weekly classes as well as teacher professional development, and I also do school-wide assemblies on a bit larger scale. So it's been a lot of fun.
So what do you actually do with them? What do the assemblies look like? What does it look like when you're working directly with students or teachers?
Sure. So I will explain the framework that I work with, and it's a five-element framework originally created by a company called Little Flower Yoga. The methodology is connect, breathe, move, focus, and relax. So within each and every class, we do something that helps students connect with themselves, connect with the environment, connect with the people around them. We do something that helps them breathe and give them breathing exercises that they can use in their life. We do a movement to kind of wake up the body. And really, with kids, it's about helping them to get re-embodied into their body, because often as adults, we can be sort of guilty of disembodying kids when we tell a student that they're, or as we tell our kids, if we have our parents, we tell our kids that they're cold when they say that they're warm and they have to put on their jacket. Or we tell them that they're hungry when they say that they're not hungry. And we tell them how they feel, and we're disembodying their self-awareness. So movement helps them to really feel back into their body so they can trust what their bodies are telling them. If we do focus activities, so that's the fourth element, which, as you know, is so needed, especially now with just how much, I mean, we all need it with how much social media and just the media in general pulls our attention away. Our attention is so valuable that we don't realize that where we're giving it to is showing up in our life in mostly unconscious ways. So giving kids the tools that they can practice to build attention, like it's a skill that we build rather than it's something that you just have. So we always introduce it like that, of we're going to build a skill of attention. And with that, that helps them to be able to focus on their tests. And it really just helps them to not be so distracted all the times, or at least give them resources when they need to turn off. And then the last element is more of that turning off space, and that's relax. Because so often kids are wired and tired. They're wired from all the things that are happening during the day, and they're so wired that they can't fall asleep. So they wake up and now they're tired all day again. And so it's this kind of back and forth in their day. So connect, breathe, move, focus, relax. That's the methodology that most of my work is framed in now, with as far as with teachers, with students. The assembly is a little bit, it's with that methodology, but it's called the power of positivity. And it's kind of a play on words of pause and positivity, because mindfulness is really about helping us learn how to pause and helping us learn how to be kind to ourselves and to others. So the assembly tells a story, and it's a little bit more inspirational in that way, but we're also doing practical exercises with kids that are going to help them learn how to curb aggressive behavior, as well as how to speak to themselves, really, and understand how we speak to ourselves matters. And we get to consciously choose that narrative if we are aware of it. So, in a nutshell, that's kind of the basis of how I do my work. And then also with that, I do self-care for teachers. And that's really, I think, where my specialty is, being a guided meditation teacher. And I have a lot of tracks online. So it's really giving teachers that refill that they need, so then they can have more energy to be in the classroom. Because I think you were in the classroom, so you know, and it seems like it's the case. It's a teachers aren't wanting to stay there. They're stressed out, they're anxious. So
That's tough.
they need some tools that they can use, and that's also part of the work that I do.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to dig into that a little bit more deeply, a little bit further in our conversation. This is really interesting, Lou, because you're talking about mindfulness slightly, with slightly different language than I think I've been familiar with, which I actually really love because it kind of reframes and gives a new context to it. You talked about disembodying being this major gap for students, for children. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that. I mean, you kind of touched on a couple of things that adults, how adults contribute to that without really knowing it, but it kind of opened up some questions in my mind about connection to screens and some of the other things that we're dealing with right now that might further contribute to it. So I guess my question would be, how is this showing up in different ways? What are some of the kind of unknown ways that we're contributing to disembodying students from their, senses and their experience, and how is this impacting them?
I think the most clear one that comes to mind is the pressure that kids feel to perform well, and the stress and anxiety that they feel often, unfortunately, from parents who want their kids to perform well in school, and how overscheduled they are. So all of this stuff is normally in the mental world. So it's a lot of tests, it's a lot of studying, it's a lot of studying for things that you're not taking next year. Like, I know parents that are sending kids to things like the mathnasium and all of those things. And sure, totally, some kids need that extra tutoring. And then I think what I see is some kids just need to take a break and need to have an hour where they're not overscheduled. So all of this pressure to do well on a test leads them to be stuck in their head and anxious, and it leads them and many of us, adults, to not be connected to our bodies in a way that is healthy. And that it's not to say that everyone has to be an athlete. That's not what we're talking about when we're saying like get back into your body, but of just feeling a sense that I don't live, I'm not that voice in my head. And we all forget that. And so these practices help students to, on a physiological level, feel what it feels to be more in centered, I would say, and more balanced in their approach and just how they're showing up during the day. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and the idea of overscheduling, I mean, thinking about what that does kind of on a practical level for students, kind of inside of their experience, you know, they're a lot of times I imagine having to ignore what their body is telling them in terms of being tired or feeling overwhelmed in order to kind of meet the expectations, that they're, you know, that they're kind of having put on them. I wonder if the pace of the school day can also contribute to this because, you know, any educator knows that the school day is scheduled down to the minute. I mean, it literally is scheduled down to the minute. And so teachers are scheduled down almost to the second. I wonder if the pace of the school day and having to move from subject to subject and having only so much allotted time to think about a given concept, if all of that also contributes to this phenomenon of being stuck in your head and not being able to be centered in your body. What do you think?
I think 100%. I am a big, big believer that environment shapes so much of our experience that we don't even realize it. It's just happening. The people that we're around, the things that we do, as far as who else is there. So if a student is going to a school and that culture is busy, right? And most schools are, right? We're moving from class to class. Then there is a feeling of anxiety just in the air with everyone trying to do that. So it's palpable. We know when we're in a place where we feel relaxed. We know when we're around people that we feel calm. And this comes back to, again, why it's so important for teachers. Because if a teacher shows up in the classroom and they're regulated and they are just in their own place of being able to hold the space in a way that's supportive for the kids, and then they're gonna receive that, regardless if they're teaching them mindfulness tools or not. If the teacher presents that to the classroom, that they feel it. It's actually called interpersonal neurobiology. So like the prefrontal cortex of the student will co-regulate with the prefrontal cortex of the dominant figure in the room. So it's happening on a really deep, a deep neurological level.
So what does this look like practically? Like, what's an example of a teacher who is holding space well? What is a student gonna, what is that teacher going to be exhibiting, you know, whether in speech or in body language? And then how is the student going to mirror that back?
I think the word that comes to mind is someone that is just present. Like the teacher is able to be there and not stuck in her mode of what she has to teach. And maybe if something comes up during the class where she can facilitate someone's question or someone's concern, if someone's not having a bad day, and it's the difference in, I think, yelling at students and trying to force control in the classroom. And really, another aspect of this, which is not my forte, by the way, classroom management is not my forte. I know people, I have colleagues who are phenomenal in the space of mindful classroom management. But there's a part in that as well, and just how we're facilitating the group. So I think we can all, we don't even have to be at a school to imagine this. We know the people in our life that when we are around, they exude a sense of we want to be around them. We enjoy being around them. That we don't even know what it is. And maybe they're happy, maybe they're calm, so maybe they're interested. Truly, they care about you, and because they care about you, you like being around them, right? Instead of them being so consumed in their world, and you feel their anxiety. So I think we don't have to go to the classroom to experience what that is like. For us, I'm sure we know everyone listening to this would know some people on both ends of the spectrum in their life where they have that feeling when they were with other people.
The feeling that you can sort of just exhale being in the presence of that person.
Sure, yep.
Yeah. So let's go maybe inside a little bit, inside of the teacher experience. How do you help teachers come to that place where they are that person? What are some of the tools you give them? What are some of the exercises they go through to come to that place?
Well, first we have a conversation about what self-care means to them and what that is. And I've done this before with parents or teachers, and they don't even know what that word is. They don't even have any meaning to it because it's so foreign of a concept. So we'll have some discussions around this topic. And then the tools for adults are the same tools actually for kids as far as the shorter practical ones. I mean, you can do, longer guided mindfulness practices, but in the realm of education, I try and keep it really practical. So simply exhaling longer than you inhale. If you take two breaths in, four breaths out, and you do that for, let's say, 5, 10 rounds, however long that you have, at least I would say at least try and do it for at least 5 rounds. The exhale longer is gonna trigger our parasympathetic nervous system, and it's gonna help us to relax a little bit. It's why when we sigh, we're exhaling longer, and it's our body naturally releasing tension in our body. So we can consciously do that in a very, very simple tool of just exhaling longer than the inhale. So that's probably on the more simple side. And simply, I think one of my favorite ones that I do a lot, especially when we just need to, we're feeling flustered or we're feeling stressed out, or maybe we have just a situation that triggers us, is to just, if that, let me preface this. If that happened to another person, and I can ask you, Rebecca, if someone walked in and was like really sad or just frustrated, angry, just kind of having an emotional experience. And let's say it's someone that you really care for. What is one of the things that you would go and do for this person?
Well, I think the first thing I would do is try to create space. So
Sure.
I kind of
Yeah.
get on their emotional level, quiet down, maybe ask a question, maybe communicate understanding or space or safety in some way.
Okay. I like that. I like that. I think that's a great start. So let's say it's for us. We can take a time to like step back for a second, right? That's kind of creating a little bit of that space, facilitating our own space. And then what I was then the next thing we could do is maybe if it's someone that we're close to that they're struggling with, we would give them a hug. So instead of giving them a hug, we don't have to give ourselves a full-blown hug, but we can just place one hand on our heart and one hand on our belly, and it's this somatic hold. And maybe you can kind of do it with me right now and just note how it feels for you. But it actually is in physiologically, it's actually putting the pressure on our bodies that we feel comfort and we feel safe. So this is another simple thing. We can close our eyes, we can feel our heartbeat under our hands, we could feel if we can hear the blood or feel the breath or the blood moving through our bodies. And just taking a few moments in a position of kind of holding ourselves in a way that we might hold anyone else who's struggling. So there's another example of very short practical ways that we can just pause and take that space for ourselves.
I like that. I see where you're going with that. I took it a
I
different
was trying to
direction.
say, no, I love that direction because I think that's part of it. First, we don't barge into the room and just like go at it, right? We have to set space. And I think that's a very important topic as well. Becca, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
So you had mentioned that I had brought mindfulness in a different context or a diff the way that I'm viewing it is different than what you know, and I'd love to hear how that is different and what you've known about it for my sake, as well as I think it would just be interesting to see just to hear from you.
Sure. So I'll kind of give this as a caveat. I am certainly not an expert in mindfulness and not extensively practiced in it either. But I think what I am picking up about your approach to it, Lou, is it's very holistic and integrated with some other disciplines, like with social emotional learning, or you're speaking about it very similarly in the classroom. that you would even in practice for adults in their homes or in their place of work or kind of in their day-to-day. And it's very accessible too. So there's something about the way you're playing on the word positivity that is, I think, I don't know, that might be where I'm picking up kind of a different approach. I don't know if that answers the question. I haven't really thought about it, in depth, but those are some of my kind of off the top thoughts.
No, totally. I think so. I'm finishing up a certification in social and emotional learning right now, and then we have to do our weekly practicums. And all of the things and the exercises that I do are mindfulness practices. And to me, I like knew that going into it. Like I knew social emotional learning is mindfulness in so many ways of just understanding our emotions and understanding how to manage our emotions and understanding inner relationships. It's literally, like literally, I'm looking at it and it's the same thing. And I find that the SEL world is a little more in little more academic. So that means it's a little more in the head. And I think there's some value in that. But in being in both worlds now and seeing it, I think that the more practical side of having the actual experience, because what we remember in life are experiences. What we remember are emotions. So we don't necessarily remember all the knowledge. And so kind of inviting SEL in a very knowledge-based curriculum to schools, great, you're on the right track, but we need to bring in the embodied experience. And that's gonna really stick, I think, more than just having the academic way to look at it.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I love that you went there because it kind of gave me a little light bulb for what I'm actually picking up from your approach, which is it's highly relational. And the bulk of what I have at least seen and experienced in mindfulness and mindfulness practices is not highly relational person to person. It's maybe relational you to yourself. But you've been talking a lot about how you're feeling in the presence of another person and how teachers can bring this space into their students and how you don't have to even wait to be in the classroom to feel that out, but you can experience it with the people in your life. And I think that that is actually what I'm picking up, which is, I mean, in it very connected to social emotional learning. So sorry, I'm getting real excited about that right now,
I
but
love
yeah,
it.
that's it.
I love it. Great.
Sorry, I'm thinking. My wheels are turning a little bit here. I'll cut all this probably, but
No, I threw you off by asking you a question.
yeah, you did, but I love it. Yeah, and you already answered a question that I was gonna ask, which is how should our approach differ between adults and children, or is it largely the same? And you said really that the tools that we're bringing to students are what we can be using in our own lives, which was really interesting.
Yeah, I think what works works. In this type of stuff, it's not like something is more adult and more child, right? Feeling our breath is our breath, and practicing focus is practicing focus. And you'll find that sometimes kids can practice focus for longer than someone, an adult, can practice. It's really not necessarily so age dependent. Now, that's to say, I do work with preschools as well, and maybe I wouldn't go into an adult class and start doing a bunch of sing songs and that sort of stuff. Even though now that I'm thinking of it, I think adults could really use that as well. I think the aspect of play could be really valuable. So I retract my statement.
Yeah, it's a fine line to walk for sure.
We're all
You're probably
kids, and I
right.
think we all need to awaken that inner child that can just play and have fun and be in the moment and not just think of all the responsibilities and the to-dos. And so I think there is value in that. And that's where mindfulness has a broad generalization, that it's not just sitting down by yourself, closing your eyes, and whatever that entails, that it's so much more. It's really this way of being in the world, of not being so rushed, of coming from a place of being, right? The most There's a cliche thing, maybe it's more cliche in my world, but it's We're human beings, we're not human doings. So remembering that we can bring a state of being while we're doing, right? We can just kind of pause a second and notice, whoa, how am I feeling right now? What am I doing? Can I bring that state of presence to what I'm doing? And then we find that we enjoy what we're doing so much more.
So is that kind of the starting point for teachers or for adults in general in helping kids come to this point? Is it maybe just to start with, hey, let's just pause, helping them to slow down?
I think if nothing else, if a teacher listens to this and just at the beginning of class says, "Hey, before we get going, let's pause and let's close our eyes and let's just notice, feel in our breath, or let's just take a few breaths, or let's move a little bit," and just a minute or 2 minutes in the beginning of class, all we're doing is we're shifting that rushed energy that everyone, rushed into the class, bell rings. Let's start. We're not continuing that rushed energy, and we're just shifting it a little bit and then moving forward. And it does not take long to shift the energy in the room like that. Does not take long at all. It could just be a sound that you make. And I use a bowl. Some colleagues will just use one of those vibratones that you can find in music class, of just like a sound just gives an energy of a pause, and that could just be it. And you're still shifting the energy where that now students can engage a little bit more. And that's really what it's about doing, is helping kids learn. If they are in their sympathetic nervous system, if they are feeling that, literally their body is not letting them learn. And we don't realize that so many kids are sitting in class feeling afraid of something, whether it's a bully or whether they're mulling over something in their head. So I think starting a class in a short, practical way can have some really tangible effects.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more about the impact of mindfulness on student learning. So, first step is shifting them out of their sympathetic nervous system to where they can engage. Is there a step beyond that, or is mindfulness really just kind of putting students in the right frame of mind or in the ideal frame of mind to learn? Is it removing barriers, or is it doing something more than that?
I think it's always moving to a space of removal, meaning that at our core, we have this natural, peaceful state. I always use the analogy of clouds, right? At our center, it's the sun. It's bright, it's shiny, and then we're removing clouds that are making us not be able to see our own light and to see our own or feel our own warmth and whatever that means to you. Just feel our own sense of calm and presence. But on the first thing that I said, I think is such a huge part, is that literally if students are in their sympathetic nervous system, they can't learn. It's what their body is doing. Their body is saying there might be danger present. So it shuts down our thought processes, it shuts down our concentration. We've all had that experience, people listening to this, where you're focusing on something and then you get a text. You look at your phone and it's something that is a little jarring emotionally, something that you weren't expecting, someone who wants you to do something later that day that maybe you don't have time for. And you, what happens? You're jarred by it. And then your concentration, you go back to work on it, what you're doing, but your body is in sympathetic nervous system right there. Like even, it's not like a car's coming into our lane and we're where we really need it, but we don't realize that we go into it in these moments of emotional jarring. That's why we're losing concentration, because our body's getting prepared for a threat, because that's what it's programmed to do. So we got to understand that kids are. There's so many things in their life that are jarring them. So that's a number one factor, is that if they are in that, their learning is not happening at the level, if at all, that it needs to be. So yes, I would say if all that we can do is help kids be in their parasympathetic nervous system and help kids be in that state, then they're gonna be more engaged. They're gonna be able to think clearly and concentrate. So I think that's it's such a core element, I'd say, and something definitely a core element that I talk a lot about in my trainings with teachers.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of like a really essential understanding to have in the classroom, and you know, even for administrators, for anybody that working with students, because you know, we know that that anxiety is trending up year over year for students. I mean, we're hitting like epidemic levels, and just the presence of that anxiety alone is having an incredible impact on student learning, on student engagement. So yeah, I think starting with that understanding that there might, every time students come in the classroom, there might be some blockage that's already there inhibiting their learning. And we've got to start by helping them move around it, or by moving it, you know, from in front of them.
I think if as educators, if we want to do a job as really teaching the whole child, right? Not just teaching them our subject, but teaching the human being that's sitting in the classroom, and being that such a catalyst for the proper learning. I think it's essential.
Mm-hmm. So I've got a couple questions about other adult stakeholders in the mix. And so the first question would be, for administrators, where are you seeing administrators really effectively support their teachers' well-being and their teachers' ability to step into mindfulness first for themselves? What are those administrators doing really well?
I think first off, they're actually the awareness is always number one with anything in life. Anything, awareness, we have to start with aware that there is an issue, or they're aware that something needs to be done. So if there is an administrator that's being aware, and I think many admin are aware at least of social and emotional learning. I know in New Jersey, I think it's a requisite in your curriculum. Mindfulness is on the tail end of that. So awareness, receptivity is step one. And then I think step two is doing something, acknowledging that it has to fit in, or just seeing, not that it has to. I never want to say it has to fit into your curriculum, because I get it. Educators, principals, admin, there's a million and a half things mm-hmm. that they have going on that I can't imagine. I have so much respect for the work that they do. I could not do their work and be nonstop like I think a lot of them are. So I respect that work, and we never want to feel, and I think with anything in schools, teachers or admin feels like they're not helping their teachers. They're actually putting more stuff on their teachers to learn. And so that's why mm-hmm. I think offering some self-care, really, really making it like, hey, it's going to be, this is for you. This is for you to feel good. And making sometimes it optional. I think what I found is it helps to not make things forced. Make it optional. Let's say I'm doing a pilot initiative in a school district here in New Jersey, and it's at one elementary school. So make it small and make it optional and grow it from there. That's what I've seen, I think, work best. And that's what I know when I speak with other colleagues in the area of what or in the field of what works best to get more of an initiative within a district is start at an elementary school. Start with teachers, the early adopters who want to do it, so they're not forced to do it. And then it spreads from there. They have more interest. When we see the results, when they see the results in themselves, then word spreads. And word of mouth, if you're into any sort of business world, you know that is your number one marketing tool. That is what changes. That is what makes a good company go to a great company. So it's really the word of mouth. So admin giving it a chance to spread, and it helps if they have their own practice or they've used it themselves and they know that it works, because it's way easier to be a champion for something that we know we use. But a lot of them are just seeing the need, and I'm grateful for it, obviously being in doing this work, but there's obviously a long road to go.
Mm-hmm. That's a great place to start, though. Awesome. And what about parents? So parents who are really understanding, you know, the expectations that are placed on their children, and just kind of the anxious dynamics we've been talking about. What are some of the things they can bring into the home that can help build these practices into their children so they're stepping into the classroom as centered as possible.
I think there's so many resources for this. I mean, we all know, and I'm no therapist or child psychologist, just how much our parents and home life shape who we are in every essence of that. But for a parent that's like, hey, I'm interested in doing something with my kids, I think one of the coolest things that you can do is wherever in your area, if you can find a kids mindfulness class or kids mindfulness or yoga class, and ideal situation, you go, it's like maybe like a mommy and me class sort of thing, or a parent and me class where you can go with your kid and experience and do it with them. And not only is it helpful for both of you, it's a bonding experience that you could have, or see if there's any actual classes that you can bring your kids to where they're having a more weekly experience of these practices. Now, many of you are listening are not going to maybe have this in your area. So there's many resources that you can find online as far as practical tools. We talked a little bit about just like some simple tools that you can use on your own. I recommend Little Flower Yoga as a huge, huge resource with a lot of practices and things that you could do some your own study and bring some of what they offer into your kid's life. And again, take the self-care for yourself, right? Find space where you are not exuding a state of stress and anxiety to your child, because they are going to pick that up. So to bring it back again, it's just first really knowing that it's self-care is not selfish, that when the cliche that's used is that we can't pour from an empty cup. So we really need to be mindful of knowing what makes us happy, and knowing that we can take some me time, and it's not all sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. I know some parents out there hearing this might have a different view on this and think that, I think so many parents totally give up their lives for their kids, that losing a little bit of themselves in that process, it shows up in how they feel and how they're around. So not that that's a extreme example, but really understanding that it's okay for you to take a break, and it's okay for you to take that care for yourself, because your happiness is the number one thing that's going to matter to your child more than anything. If they see you're happy, then doesn't even matter if you're teaching, or it would love for you to teach mindfulness. But if they see a model of happiness, then that energy that you are being around them most, that's going to be everything. So we're getting into a different territory of just parents like have to looking at their own life and being like, wow, am I happy? And these are big questions. But that's the thing with mindfulness, social and emotional learning, we're facing real human questions, and that sometimes it's easier to just brush under the table and to just throw ourselves into our work and to not see what's really there. And so often you'll get into this and you'll uncover some things that maybe you didn't know that you were not looking at for a while. And it's difficult, and it's not an easy path. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that mindfulness is all about making kids calm, and our only mm-hmm. job is just, we're going to just calm down, right? Oh, mm-hmm. I need to feel more calm. I'm going to, you know, use this app because I want to get calm. But what we find when we settle, it's about our whole existence. It's about all of human emotions and allowing ourselves to feel again, because so much of what we do, so much of our culture numbs us from the present moment, whether it be food, whether it be media, whether it be all the things that we use to kind of detach. It's numbing ourselves from ourselves. So mindfulness can start out with an intention to get more calm, but you can find that it might bring up some things that we need to work with. And so that's on the adult spectrum, which at home, which would be a little different than if I'm going to introduce this in the education world. So that's my note for parents on there.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Yeah. And I think the kind of the big takeaway from all this, well, a couple big takeaways for me is that
we're not just talking about a couple tools and practices, we're really talking about a much bigger picture. And then if we're going to be helping students learn ways to take care of themselves and cultivate their own well-being, it's going to start with the adults in their lives, whether in the classroom, whether out of the classroom. It's got to start there. And it's, you can't really pass on to students what you don't have yourself. So we've got to start with that. We've got to start with us.
That's it. That's always, if we can all just live by that principle of starting with us, not in this, selfish that it's all about me way, but mm-hmm. in like understanding that, as we do our work and we grow as humans, as we grow as what we in our values and in our morals, we it's a natural evolution. I've seen it within my own life. That's why I'm so passionate about this, because I didn't mention in this, but I was someone who really only cared at one point in my life about partying and drinking and just doing the weekend thing that I wasn't at all mindful, and I was going through that cycle. And I've seen just by changing the things that I was consuming, changing my practices, it transformed. I transformed from the person who I was. So I know the power of these practices, and that's why I think I am so passionate about doing this work.
Okay, so mindfulness is a trending topic, and I don't mean that it's trendy, right? But it's a trending topic. It's getting a lot more attention. Social emotional learning is becoming a household expectation across U.S. education, and all of this is very, very good, but it's still a very nascent stage. We're still very early. If you were to paint a picture of sort of the ideal state for holistic education, mindfulness in schools, what does it look like? I mean, certainly it wouldn't be kind of an ad hoc approach in any way. What does it look like for things to be fully integrated? What does it look like for all 50 states to be invested in the right ways? If you were to kind of just give a snapshot, what would that look like for you?
I think it's simply having it be part of the daily routine of a school, right? Every school most of the time has these announcements that come on. I've seen elementary schools, I've seen certain schools do the mindfulness practice during that, right? We all say the Pledge of Allegiance or whatever that is. There's just part of that. That's systemic within schools, right? Many schools say that. So something like that, where it's there in a small bite in a way that maybe can be supportive to the school, but it's also part of what is getting taught in education, teacher education in universities. Mm. It's part of, mm-hmm. it's happening as part of the lexicon rather than another thing. I think that's where it's going to get more ingrained. Maybe where there's a class, maybe where every student, gym class is one thing, and I think there's value in the movement, but I don't want to take away what gym can do for us, but a different class or just an optional class at the end of every school where there's a teacher there that'll stay that does this work with any kid that wants to stay after school. So you have that optional. So I think it's just built into the fabric of schools in a more acceptable, usual, this is just what we do in school sort of way, rather than this new trendy thing that we're trying out. So maybe that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you hit a big nail on the head in talking about teacher education and preparation and building it into the lexicon and kind of building it into the expectations of how teachers are trained and what the expectation is coming into the classroom. That's awesome. And I wondered if you were going to say anything. You said something the last time we chatted that was so intriguing to me, and I've been noodling on it, and it was this. You said,
I think I remember. Was it like a quote type of thing?
Yeah. Do you remember what you said? What do you think I'm going to say?
I think what you're going to say is the same way that we transform an individual is the way that we transform a whole. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly that. The thing that transforms the individual is the thing that transforms the collective.
Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I wondered if, as I was asking that question, I actually hadn't made that connection, but as I asked the systemic question, I remembered what you said when you shared that quote, and I thought, you know what? I wonder if that's the answer of how to get there.
Yeah, it starts again. It's 100%. It's like, again, coming back to, it starts with one person. It starts with each individual. We try and make this radical change on a big level, but it starts with each person. So I don't think it's going to happen this wide sweeping thing, just like we're going to wake up and it's part of it. But drip by drip, it's gonna happen, or it can happen at least.
Mm-hmm. It can, and it has to, right? We have to go this direction.
Yeah, we have to do something.
Got to do something. So good. I've got a couple questions to close this out, but I actually wanted to ask you, Lou, how would you feel about walking us through just 1 or 2 minutes of some of those exercises you talked about in the beginning of our conversation, the exhaling longer than you inhale, and the self-hug. I know it's not what you called it, but yeah, could we take a minute or two? Could you just walk us through that as if our listeners are kind of sitting with you in a room? How would you do this?
I'd love to. Okay. All right. So if, wherever you're at, if you're driving, just listen to this. Keep your eyes open. If you're not driving and you can find some space to just settle into a chair, and even if you're standing up, you can go ahead and pause for a second and maybe close your eyes and feel where your body is connecting to the ground. So maybe you feel your feet on the floor. Maybe you can feel your sit bones on your chair. And just notice where your breath is right now. So notice if you can feel if it's short, or maybe you're exhaling shorter than the inhale, or maybe you're just feeling a little rushed. And just notice and see if you can relax into your space. So relax your shoulders, relax your face. Notice if there's any tension in around the eyelids. And we're just simply gonna breathe in. Feel your belly expand as you breathe. So breathe in for 1, 2. And then breathe out for 1, 2, 3, 4. Again, breathe in 1, 2. And breathe out. Feel your belly get smaller for 1, 2. 3, 4, again, in, 2, and out, 2, 3, 4. Just take 3 more rounds of that on your own breath, and we'll give you some silence for a minute. And when you're complete, place one hand on your heart, one hand on your belly, whichever one feels right for you. And just notice what you notice. Notice how your body feels. Notice if that changed anything. And just give yourself some form of appreciation just for taking that space and taking that time for yourself. It doesn't take much. Maybe it's a thank you. Maybe it's, I see you. I see you working hard. I appreciate you. And we can say and speak to ourselves like this. We see that we give ourselves a real gift. Whenever you're ready, you can go ahead and open your eyes and come back to your day.
Thanks, Lou. That was awesome.
You're welcome. I would know that's definitely more of an adult practice. If I was going to do that with kids, I may not do as much setup and relaxation and just kind of make it a little more simpler. But for adults, so that's I just want to note that that's probably more adult. But kid, it would be fine for a teenager or any. It would be fine for a kid, but I definitely want to just make that note.
Awesome. Well, let's close out with a couple final thoughts. Who are you giving an A to these days?
I really, truly, and this is not just saying this to strike the people that are listening to this, I'm giving an A to the teachers that I see in the classroom. Again, I don't come from education. I am not a classroom teacher, and in the past couple of years of getting into this world, I see how hard it is to be a classroom teacher. And I think I saw a post from someone of the average salary for a teacher. Maybe this is just New Jersey, I'm not sure. Of not really moving in the past 10 years and being at a very low level and just seeing how underpaid teachers are and how much they work and I acknowledge them in so many ways. And I don't, again, I don't say that to speak to the choir here, but in just I'm coming from the outside and I couldn't do your work. I couldn't do it. So I am appreciative of you, even if you're not bringing mindfulness into classroom, even if maybe you are a little anxious or stressed, I get it. So I appreciate you all.
Absolutely. I echo it 100%. And here's a question I'm really excited to ask you. How can people get in touch with you? How can they get connected to your work? I know a lot of what you're doing is in the state of New Jersey. We have listeners literally all over the world. How can they take advantage of your service, Lou?
Sure. Best place to go for my work in education would be onemindfuleducation.com, and that's one spelled out. So it's onemindful education.com, and that has all of my offerings. And I'll be traveling a lot this spring. I'll be in Arkansas, I'll be in Oklahoma, I'll be doing work at some summer conferences. I have some schools that I've worked at in Florida. So I'm around. I will travel for teachers' development and for assemblies. Obviously, I can't be there every week to do longer trainings or longer curriculum classes, but I'd love to share these practices with your school and just start a conversation to see how else I can be supportive. So I think that would be a good place to start.
Awesome. This has been so fantastic. I want to go back to those practices and take like a half an hour and just like feed my soul. Oh, thank you so much for being on, and thank you for sharing just your wisdom and your experience.
Appreciate it, Rebecca. Thank you so much for the work that you are doing. It's so cool. I love everything that you're doing. So keep doing good work.
Thanks, Lou. Back at you.
Thanks for kicking off the year with Off the Assembly Line. You can find episode details in the show notes and additional resources at offtheassemblyline.co. If you want to level up this year and do it with a talented and generous learning community, the Teacher Mastermind might be the next step you're looking for. Go to teachermastermind.com for more info or shoot me an email at rebecca@teachermastermind.com. Off the Assembly Line is produced by me, Rebecca Reed, with many thanks to our incredible guests. If you like what you heard, be sure to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you're listening on. Until next week, pause, find your breath, and then go make a ruckus.